Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the CJ Evolution Podcast. This is episode 254 of this great and growing show, growing because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you for tuning in. If you go to iTunes and rate and review my podcast, just put a couple notes in there. I sure would appreciate it. That's why we continue to grow, because of you. Special thanks to all those brave men and women. Whatever you're doing in the criminal justice field, keep doing a fantastic job and the work you are doing. I know sometimes it may feel like you don't have a lot of support, but you got a ton of support. I wish some people were more vocal with their support, but keep up the great work. As you know, I'm partnered with Four Sigmatic, a great and growing coffee company. Amazing products they produce, most notably their mushroom coffee. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. If you head over to the podcast website, cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off of all your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, so much of what we do in criminal justice, whether you're in law enforcement, in corrections, whatever you're doing, is body language and learning how to talk to people, read people that you come into contact with. My next guest is an expert in body language, interviewing, and interrogation. So grab a pad of paper, notebook, whatever, and a pen, and take some notes. Very informative that you're going to enjoy, and you're going to love this guest. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm so excited to have Chase Hughes on the show. Chase, you there, sir?
Patrick, what's up, man? It's glad to be here.
Well, I appreciate you being here, sir, and I know you're very, very busy. But for those of listeners out there who don't know who Chase Hughes is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, sir?
Yeah, I own a company called Ellipsis Behavior Laboratories. Kind of a mouthful, but we teach everything from interrogation to behavior profiling and extreme persuasion and influence, which we call manufacturing compliance in humans. And I've served in the military for 20 years, and our company is the company that develops the products that are designed for law enforcement or military or government applications for psychological operations, intelligence operations, and a lot of this behavior profiling stuff we teach to interrogation units to analyze human behavior. And recently, you know, we've come into the law enforcement scene and the criminal justice scene when I asked a friend of mine if they had some kind of training on how to recognize violent behavior in suspects, like before it happened. And he said no, he had never heard of that. And I was astonished. I would assume that there were tons and tons of curriculum for this. And he said no, and this was probably 6 years ago. So we did, we analyzed around 19,000 hours of body cam footage and put together this tactical behavior science course that we teach to police here around the country. We're teaching in Stockholm, Sweden, and teaching the Scotland Yard in London. And the course has been fantastic. And I had assumed my whole life, I guess, before we started creating this content, that there was a major course out there somewhere that taught officers how to recognize this stuff so they weren't behind the time power curve, so to speak.
Well, that's amazing. And, you know, I can attest, Chase, you know, being in law enforcement for 23 years, we do have some courses that maybe you've heard of, read, interview, and interrogation,
sure.
You know, things like, I'm sure you have, you know, that's pretty much, you know, we have courses out there, we can send officers to training, but a lot of it's just on-the-job training, learning cues and things like that, but nothing like you have out there.
Oh, thanks. And a lot of the times what I see when we're training these police officers is like the number one, or I'd say the top two questions I get is, why don't we have more time for this class? And the second is, why didn't this exist earlier? Like the research is there, or not the research, but the evidence has always been there. So yeah. We developed this not just to teach, like, hey, here's a list of what to look for. Because giving people a list doesn't give them skills.
Exactly.
So you're not really giving them the skills to spot behavior, to look at human behavior, the history of it, and how to actually read people in your normal life. And mm-hmm. there's 1,000 studies out there that say nonverbal communication is 2/3 yeah. or more of communication, but it's ignored.
Yeah.
And I think we can make a huge difference.
And why do you think, really quick, Chase, why do you think it's ignored? Just people just don't, they don't recognize it, they're not trained, or they recognize it, they don't care? I mean, what do you think the reason is? It's probably a multitude of things.
I think it's a lot of things, but I think it may boil down to it's either difficult, like people think it's either difficult to understand, or it's dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny is, like, if you go to, let's, I'll just pick Princeton University, and you get a degree in psychiatry or psychology, the same institution that's publishing a paper that says 2/3 of communication is nonverbal spends less than 20 minutes teaching nonverbal communication to behavioral therapists.
So they don't practice what they preach.
No, it just seems silly to me.
Now, what I mean, it's amazing. I think it's very valuable, as well as I'm sure many of the listeners out there think it's, you know, most of them are in criminal justice. Now, how did you get started in this work? What was the catalyst? I mean, how did you say, you know, that's what I want to do and I want to concentrate more on this? Have you always had a interest in you know, trying to read people and things like that?
I haven't always had an interest. I joined the military when I was 17. And when I was 19, I was a typical teenage kid who thought he had everything figured out. And I was at a bar one night, and I asked this girl if she wanted to come back to my barracks, or I'm not sure where I was living at the time. She turned me down. She said no. So that night, I remember going home, like, ripping my laptop open and typing into Google how to tell when girls like you. And this was big to me. I really wanted to master this, that I kind of wanted to get, I wanted to be the selector instead of the selectee.
Yeah.
And that was big for me growing up. And I had a lot of social anxiety as a younger guy. And the more I learned about body language, the more human it made everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can see somebody's fears, their insecurities, their weaknesses, just generally on public display in a conversation, but just no one else in the room can see it except for you,
mm-hmm.
it humanizes everybody. It makes them more approachable. You don't really feel superior because you're just kind of saying, wow, that person's screwed up just like I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where the more I learned, the more that, like, learning about human behavior cured my social anxiety growing up.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead, sir.
Well, I mean, I had an obsession,
mm-hmm.
and it was an actual obsession. I didn't stop learning about it. I went to college for this, and I think I've read every book on human behavior that's been published in the last 50 years,
mm-hmm.
and some going back way before that. And it wasn't enough. And I wound up writing my book, which is just a few days ago, hit 2 years on the #1 bestseller list. I wrote that book because it didn't exist. That was the book I had been looking for my whole life, and just kind of got fed up, so I wrote one.
Now, tell us about your book real quick.
So the book focuses on human behavior. So there's tons of books out there on persuasion. I've read all of them. There's, like, I think probably the most famous is called Persuasion by Robert Cialdini.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a book called Influence as well. There's a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Dale Carnegie, yeah.
I think it's the #2 best-selling book next to the Holy Bible. And those books talked about universal applications of influence. And that's kind of like learning surgery without learning anatomy. And I wanted to say that, like, a human being is not a piano. When mm-hmm. you sit down at different pianos, the keys are all in the same place.
Yeah.
But when you talk to different people, it's the same kind of a musical instrument there, but the keys are in different places with every single person that you speak to.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to dispel some of that and get to the point where we could have extreme amounts of influence, extreme amounts of persuasion, whether it be for someone who's studying sales or entrepreneurship or psychotherapy to get to faster outcomes for their patients.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing the person is almost as important, if not more important, than knowing how to direct their thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk a lot about...
It goes into everything from interrogation to hypnosis,
mm-hmm,
to behavior profiling, body language, lie detection, all the way down into some much darker stuff.
Yeah.
Probably not suitable for your listeners. probably not interesting.
Now, you just mentioned lie detectors, polygraph test, Chase, and I know in law enforcement we use them not only for pre-employment stuff, government uses them, but we also use them in criminal investigations. Now, what do you think about polygraph tests?
I'll start this out by saying the guy who invented the polygraph,
mm-hmm,
3 years after he invented it, he said that he regretted it. And he always would regret it because of the abuse that it's being used for. It's not a lie detector.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a lie detector.
Exactly.
And the polygraph itself is maybe on a really, really good day, about 63% accurate. And it's actually biased against people who are telling the truth. They're more likely to show deception indicators as a result of stress. So
physiological responses, right, Chase?
Right, yeah. So, I mean, you're measuring a few things with a polygraph. You're measuring respiratory rate and galvanic skin response or sweat. Some of them measure temperature and pulse. And now we have ones that measure pupil dilation or whether or not you're puckering your butthole, which is actually a polygraph countermeasure.
Wow.
Just like doing an anal pucker during a truth question,
yeah,
increases or spikes up your heart rate and blood pressure just temporarily. And that was one of the countermeasures back in the day. But now they have something called a smart seat that detects that.
Yeah.
So I'm very suspicious about anyone who places a lot of faith in polygraphs.
But it's so interesting. We see them all over, you know, talk shows, and you know the polygraph says this is your baby, you know what I mean, and all this stuff, the Maury Povich and things like that, and I agree with you very much. I think they have their uses, but I was always taught, again, they have their uses in criminal investigations, but I was always taught, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that polygraphs are really good at getting you to admit to stuff you wouldn't normally admit to. But it depends on the polygrapher too.
It does, and that, I think that the person doing the examination, the polygraph examiner, is the determining factor on whether you'll pass or fail or whether or not you're going to cough up information.
Yeah.
So it's not the machine that you ever have to beat, because there is no sign of deception that the polygraph is measuring. It only measures body response.
Yeah, yeah.
And usually, like, the worst time of a polygraph is when he's taking the machine off of you. The machine is shut completely off, and you think the interview's over. You're completely relaxed, and he says, hey, I noticed, it's no big deal, nobody else is going to know, but, you know, I noticed a spike in your heart rate when you were talking about marijuana usage.
Is there anything you want to tell me?
And that's most of the time, it's the examiner, not the machine.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of CVSA is the same thing, right? And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's a computer voice stress analyzer.
Yes, and it's even less accurate than a polygraph in measuring stress. The most accurate machine on the market today, and this is not a paid advertisement, is called iDetect,
mm-hmm,
from a company called Converis. And I was down at the IACP in Orlando a few months ago, and this is the Chiefs of Police Convention down there.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one of these booths down there, and I sat down there. I know every single trick in the book to beat the polygraph. I even took medicine that morning that's specifically made for passing a polygraph, or that's given out to people to pass a polygraph. And I did every countermeasure I could possibly think of to beat this thing, and it was 91% accurate.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So it's scary. It's so scary that I bought one just so I could learn how to beat this thing.
Getting back to observations and you know, reading people, studying people, you know, Chase, I mean, you train law enforcement, you train military. How can we become better observers?
I think it starts with observing in the beginning. And mm-hmm. I've been training people in lie detection in the government for a long time. And it starts in the beginning with observing the behavior without trying to interpret it.
Mm-hmm. Just say, okay, that's what I see.
Yes,
okay.
That's it. And just spend a few weeks, maybe a few months on that until your brain starts to get the hang of it. So you're basically taking something from your conscious mind, doing it over and over and over again until it just kind of pushes itself back into the subconscious part. Then the interpretation part starts coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of doing this in a methodical way to where you're not spending 10 years to learn behavior because you're trying to force everything into your conscious mind. You're just taking this step by step. It's a much faster time frame. We issue a 365-day planner, training planner, to the officers who attend the Tactical Behavior Science course on what they can do when they are out on patrol, when they're home with their families, or when they're otherwise it's just engaged with humans.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you be a really good observer, Chase, which obviously you are, and you get somebody like a sociopath or somebody who's very, very good at lying, would they be able to fool somebody like you?
Hell no.
They wouldn't?
But the reason is that it's not that with a person like that, you're not measuring deception signals.
Mm-hmm.
You're measuring parts of the story. You're measuring how many pronouns they
use. Oh, true, yeah.
Sentences. And then you're changing up your questioning technique. So if it's a person who has a really strong need for power and control, I might go into the interrogation room and trip on purpose, have a piece of my shirt tail hanging out or a coffee stain on my shirt, or forget my pen and have some 2-inch-long golf pencil that's shaved down and have to write my notes on a napkin or a scrap of paper. And deliberately look insecure or mispronounce words when a person wants to be seen as more intelligent than the people around them. I'll mispronounce words, like I'll say supposedly instead of supposedly in the interrogation room, just to make the person either A, correct me, or B, feel smarter than me. So it's
all that's amazing. So it's all you
profile.
Yeah, so you just want them to take advantage of that and make them feel superior to you.
Yes, absolutely. But when you give them what they really feed off of, they get comfortable.
That's when they start opening up.
Yeah. If you've got a guy who thrives on power and control, and you go in there and act like a dick, you'll get resistance. You have an instantaneous wall that comes up.
It works every time, like you said.
It's pretty reliable. I would never say that anything works every time.
Well, that's pretty. Yeah, that's pretty. Now, how can somebody spot deception? I know it comes back to observations, but you know, as law enforcement officers, you know this, Chase. We have to make split second decisions a lot of times. We're talking to people, and you know, maybe we don't have enough to detain somebody, and so we got to make those quick decisions. You know, we have to be able to say, all right, this guy's lying, and this is why I think so. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. So in our tactical behavior science class, we teach police, we have an entire several hours and a lot of classroom exercises dedicated to deception. But we give all the officers a quick reference guide with all the stuff in it. We could spend an hour on it if you want, Patrick. We could do a whole deception class.
Yeah.
But we go through all of the nonverbal indicators, then we go through the verbal indicators, then we go through like the syntax indicators, whether or not they say did not instead of didn't, whether or not they use pronouns or have no pronouns in their statement,
mm-hmm.
whether or not they give everything chronologically or start out with the most emotional event about what happened. So there's a whole lot that we go into for that. But I think like the most important part of that course is that violent behavior recognition part.
Yeah.
And not just giving them a list, but showing them how it works. We go through video analysis. There's a ton of data that comes through there.
Can you talk a little bit, Chase, about the behavioral table of elements?
Sure. Yeah, and actually, I can send this to you for all your listeners to download.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Your show notes. So the behavioral table of elements is it's a graphic that looks like the periodic table, and I only chose that shape because it looks familiar and I thought it looked cool.
It does look cool.
Thank you. So, you know, I thought it looked cool when we were designing it, but I wanted to fit every single human behavior, nonverbal behavior, on a single piece of paper and have them all interconnected to where you can put cells together to make something else. So you can put elements together to make a new element. So it's from the top of to the bottom of the behavioral table. It's the top of the head to the bottom of the feet. And from the left to the right is the least stressful or deceptive, to the right being the most deceptive or most stressful behaviors that we can exhibit. And each little cell has a number on it. So if you ask someone a question and their behavior tallies up to more than a score of 11, you have about a 60 to 85% chance of deception.
Wow.
So sometimes you'll ask somebody a question like, did you have sex with Monica Lewinsky? And the question, I did not have sexual relations with that woman, would score a 16 on the deception rating scale. So a lot of times you'll go way over 11. And a lot of times you'll ask questions and you'll see deception indicators, but they only rate at a 4 or a 5 or a 10 because the person's just nervous talking to either a uniformed police officer, especially, or they're talking to somebody in an interrogation room. They don't know if they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
So you'll see stress indicators, but once the stress indicators pile up to a certain level of stress behaviors, you'll start to see more deception.
Interesting. You also talk about hacking authority for influence in personal development, and that's covered in your course too, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now, the Ellipsis Manual, you mentioned it at the start of the show. Where can people find this?
So if you just type in my name or the Ellipsis Manual on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or I think Books A Million, it's on there. I think the best deal is actually Amazon, because Prime, that Amazon Prime regulates, down-regulates the price of my book.
So yeah.
I think that's the best deal.
Any other books in the works for you?
We have a book coming out on engineering compliance, and that book is probably several months away.
Yeah.
But one of the things that book really focuses on is hacking authority.
Yeah.
And that when we teach officers things like verbal judo or techniques to kind of corral someone to get a certain behavior out of them, these are persuasion techniques or influence techniques. And if you think about authority, there's I'll just really briefly touch on this. There's a study called the Milgram Experiment. It happened at Yale University in 1962. This doctor, Stanley Milgram, basically talked random people into shocking another human being to death in less than an hour, even though the person that was supposedly getting shocked was not being shocked. Just because a guy in a lab coat told them to continue shocking
the power of the of influence.
Yeah, and well, that's the power of authority.
Or authority, yeah.
So I think authority is five times more effective, because think of someone with all the persuasion techniques in the world. Could you go out on the street and convince someone to murder a stranger in an hour?
No.
You have to have the authority to do so. And even a doctor diagnosing someone with a terminal illness when it's a false diagnosis, or they're talking to the wrong patient.
Yeah.
The person who is falsely diagnosed with a terminal illness or a serious illness, they'll still get sick.
Yeah.
Even if it's not them, they don't have the illness, their body will still get sick. So this authority is what I really teach these officers to use instead of the persuasion techniques. And it gets all the way down to the nitty-gritty, to where, like, for instance, you, Patrick, think about, like, the last time you went out to a really big social gathering.
Yeah.
And you neglected something. Like, you didn't pay a bill, that you were supposed to pay that day, or you left dishes in the sink, or there's a pile of laundry, or you left your bathroom counter just a wreck. It's happened.
Yes, of course.
There's a part of our brain that's dedicated to memorizing that we have neglected something.
Mm-hmm.
So it reminds us constantly. And in the middle of the party, that's when you're speaking to someone, you're completely confident, your posture is great, but everyone has had that experience that something isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Everything looks great on the surface, but something's not right. So these tiny things in our brain that are designed to remember, like, hey, your frickin' laundry, there's a giant pile of laundry in your floor, and you just put on your suit, went out to this party, and you're acting all badass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's reminding us that there's this dissonance, there's a disconnect between our social mask and what we're doing at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows up in body language. But it doesn't show up because you're talking to someone who's a professional. It shows up because the unconscious part of our brain is reading the unconscious part of someone else's brain.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very honest, and they talk to each other the whole time.
Yeah.
Without us needing to help them talk.
So how do you teach that to somebody, Chase? How do you teach? Because it sounds in a way like you're teaching the officers to be more self-confident, right?
Yes.
But how do you teach that? I mean, I think some people are just wired differently. They're either going to be confident or they're not. You know what I mean? Or unless they can be learned. You can teach that.
Okay. I absolutely can teach that.
Okay.
But we have five areas that each of them kind of rate themselves on. And we have a rating system that basically shines a really bright spotlight into the darkest part of who they are,
mm-hmm.
which is not to shame anyone, because we've all got some stupid crap going on that
sure.
we should handle that we don't. So it shows you where you need the most development in order to get better results from human beings. That's mm-hmm. all. And then we have five behavior traits, and there's a whole rating system which I can send to you as well. It's called the authority self-assessment. And it goes into the five behavioral traits of authority, which are confidence, discipline, leadership, gratitude, and enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
So those five, you rate yourself on a 1 to 5, and it shows you what each one of them looks like. It's got a full description of every level. And there's also five authority tripwires. So you're talking to a suspect, or you're talking to someone out doing a field interview. There's five tripwires that have to be triggered in that person's brain for them to basically blindly follow you, or basically to completely trust you mm-hmm. as a person. And even if they hate police officers, if you hit those five tripwires, you're 100%. You have authority in that situation, and you'll get compliance.
That's what I was going to ask you. You already answered my question. I was going to ask you, what do you do with those people that, I know, believe it or not, there's people out there that hate the cops, but you just answered the question for me.
I'm definitely not a cop. I've been on deployments for a long time,
yeah.
and that's a whole different environment.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys face a similar amount of danger, and the police officers face a danger that is sometimes doesn't present itself like it does to the military.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a much harder job, and I think that the violent behavior recognition training is a life-saving
yeah.
thing.
Yes.
And it's to the point we have 100% money-back guarantee to every department we train.
Well, Chase Hughes, sir, if people want to find you, where can they find you?
My website is ellipsisbehavior.com, or you just type in Chase Hughes into Google. It'll probably be the first result. I hope it is.
Well, it should be the first result. Well, Chase, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the show. I could talk to you all day. I do thank you for taking your valuable time coming on. We wish you the most success in the future, and you're always welcome back, sir. We'd love to have you back on when your new book comes out.
Patrick, thanks so much, man. Had a ball.
All righty, sir. Take care.
See ya.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.